You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct. Today, we're diving into something that affects every single one of us who burns Avgas or Jet A, sustainable aviation fuel. You've probably been hearing more about it. Airlines are talking about it. The government is throwing money at it. But what does it actually mean for the pilot community? And more importantly, is this stuff real, or is it another green energy promise that's 10 years away and always will be? Let's break this down. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI. The whole journey beautifully made and built to last. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, sustainable aviation fuel, SAF for short. First, let's get clear on what it actually is because there's a lot of confusion. SAF is not some exotic new chemistry you've never seen before. It's jet fuel. It meets the same ASTM international specifications as conventional Jet A. Your turbine doesn't know the difference. Your fuel system doesn't know the difference. The molecules, once they're refined, are effectively identical to what comes out of the ground. The difference is where the carbon comes from. Conventional jet fuel pulls carbon out of the earth that's been locked underground for millions of years. You burn it, that carbon goes into the atmosphere. And it's a net addition. SAF pulls carbon from sources that are already part of the active carbon cycle. Used cooking oil, agricultural waste, municipal solid waste, even captured carbon dioxide from the air, you burn it. And in theory, you're releasing carbon that was recently captured, not ancient carbon. So the net life cycle emissions drop dramatically. Now, how much do they drop? This is where people start throwing around numbers that deserve some scrutiny. The industry commonly cites life cycle greenhouse gas reductions of up to 80% compared to conventional jet fuel. Some pathways claim even higher. But that number depends heavily on which production pathway you're talking about, what feedstock you're using, and how you account for things like land use, change, and transportation of raw materials. The data tells an interesting story here. There are currently 7 approved production pathways for SAF under ASTM D7566. The most mature is called HEFA, that stands for hydroprocessed esters and fatty acids. Basically, you take fats and oils, things like used cooking oil or animal fats, and you hydroprocess them into jet fuel. This is the pathway that produces the vast majority of SAF available today. Companies like Nest, World Energy, and Montana Renewables are the big players here. HEFA works, it's proven. It's flying right now in commercial aircraft, but it has a ceiling. There's only so much used cooking oil and animal fat in the world. If you tried to replace all of global aviation fuel consumption with HEFA pathway SAF, you'd need roughly 10 times the current global supply of these feedstocks. That math doesn't work. So the industry is investing heavily in next-generation pathways. The ones to watch are Fischer-Tropsch synthesis, which can convert almost any carbon-containing material into liquid fuel, gasification of municipal solid waste, forestry residues, agricultural waste. This is the pathway that could truly scale because the feedstock supply is enormous. Then there's alcohol to jet, where you ferment biomass into ethanol and then upgrade it to jet fuel. And the most ambitious pathway of all, power to liquid, sometimes called e-fuel or electrofuel. This is where you capture CO2 directly from the atmosphere, combine it with green hydrogen made from renewable electricity, and synthesize jet fuel from scratch. Power to liquid is the holy grail because the feedstock is literally air and water. But here's what most people miss. The energy economics are brutal. You need enormous amounts of renewable electricity to make green hydrogen. Then you need more energy to capture the CO2. Then more energy for the synthesis. By the time you have a gallon of e-fuel, you've used roughly 5 to 6 times more electrical energy than the chemical energy contained in that gallon. Compare that to just putting that electricity into a battery for a ground vehicle, and you understand why e-fuels only make sense for applications where batteries can't work. And that's aviation, at least for the foreseeable future. Battery electric flight is making real progress for short-range, small aircraft. I've covered that on this show before. But for anything over about 300 nautical miles with meaningful payload, liquid hydrocarbon fuel is going to be the answer for decades. The energy density advantage is just too large. Jet fuel packs about 43 megajoules per kilogram. The best lithium-ion batteries are around 1 megajoule per kilogram at the pack level. Even accounting for the efficiency advantages of electric motors, you're looking at an order of magnitude gap. So, if we're going to decarbonize the flights that produce the most emissions, the long-haul routes SAF is really the only game in town. Now, let's talk about the part that matters most to a pilot pulling up to a fuel truck. Cost, today. SAF costs roughly 2 to 4 times what conventional Jet A costs. For HEFA pathway fuel, you're looking at somewhere around $5 to $8 per gallon compared to maybe $2.50 to $3.50 for conventional jet fuel, depending on the market. For the more advanced pathways, like power to liquid, costs are even higher. Some estimates put e-fuels at $10 to $15 per gallon at current small-scale production. That's a hard sell when you're paying for your own fuel, but those costs are coming down. And there are good structural reasons to believe they will continue to come down. Learning curves in chemical process industries are well documented. Every time cumulative production doubles, costs tend to fall by 15 to 20%. We've seen this with solar panels, we've seen it with wind turbines, we've seen it with lithium-ion batteries. There's no reason to believe SAF production won't follow a similar curve, though the slope and timeline are debatable. The policy landscape is also pushing hard. The United States Inflation Reduction Act created a SAF blender's tax credit of up to $1.75 per gallon. The European Union's Refuel EU aviation mandate requires fuel suppliers to blend increasing percentages of SAF into their supply, starting at 2% in 2025 and ramping to 70% by 2050. That creates guaranteed demand, which gives producers the confidence to invest in new facilities. And investment is flowing. As of early 2026, there are over 100 SAF production projects announced globally in various stages of development. The International Air Transport Association, or IATA, estimates global SAF production reached about 1.5 billion liters in 2025. That sounds like a lot until you realize global aviation fuel consumption is roughly 360 billion liters per year. So SAF currently represents less than 0.5% of total supply. The goal is to get to something like 30 to 50% by 2040 and close to full replacement by 2050. Is that realistic? Honestly, it's going to be very difficult. The scale-up required is massive. We're talking about building an entirely new fuel production industry from essentially a standing start. The refinery infrastructure alone requires tens of billions of dollars in capital investment. Now, here's where this gets relevant for general aviation specifically. Most of the SAF conversation focuses on Jet A and the airline world. But what about us? What about the piston fleet? The general aviation community has its own fuel transition challenge. Leaded Avgas, 100 low lead, is the last remaining lead additive fuel in the United States. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, and the industry have been working on unleaded alternatives for years. GAMI's G100UL received a supplemental type certificate, and there's been progress on fleet-wide authorization. Swift Fuels and other companies are also working on alternatives. SAFF as a concept applies more directly to turbine aircraft, but the broader lesson is the same. Aviation fuel transitions are slow, expensive, and complicated by the fact that you cannot afford to get them wrong. When the fuel in your wing is also holding your airplane in the sky, the testing and certification standards are appropriately rigorous. One thing I want to address is the blending question. Currently, SAF is approved for use as a blend of up to 50% with conventional jet fuel. Not neat, not 100% SAF, at least not yet under current certification. There are test flights that have run on 100% SAF. Boeing and Airbus have both done it. Rolls-Royce and CFM International have tested their engines on unblended SAF. The results have been positive, but full certification for neat SAF in commercial operations is still working through the process. For pilots flying turbine aircraft today, here's the practical picture. If you fuel up at a major commercial airport, there is a small but growing chance that some percentage of the fuel going into your tanks is SAF blended with conventional Jet A. You may not even know it, and that's the point. It's supposed to be transparent and seamless. Let me give you my honest assessment of where this all lands. SAFE is real, it's not vaporware, it's flying today. The chemistry works, the engines work, the supply chain is being built, the policy support is strong and bipartisan in the United States, which is notable, but the challenges are equally real. Scaling up production by two orders of magnitude in 25 years is an enormous industrial undertaking. Feedstock competition with other sectors, renewable diesel for trucking, renewable naphtha for chemicals is genuine, and cost parity with fossil jet fuel probably requires both continued technology improvement and sustained policy support for at least another decade. For general aviation, the near-term impact is mostly indirect. SAF keeps the broader aviation industry's social license to operate intact. If airlines can demonstrate credible progress on emissions, it reduces the political pressure that could eventually trickle down to restrictions affecting all of us. The pilot who should be paying closest attention is the one flying a turboprop or a light jet for business. As SAF becomes more widely available at FBOs over the next 5 to 10 years, you'll have the option to buy it. It'll cost more, but some operators will want it for corporate sustainability commitments, and some airports may offer incentives. The bottom line? Sustainable aviation fuel is probably the most important aviation technology story of the next 25 years. Not the flashiest, not the one that gets the most clicks, but the one that determines whether our industry gets to keep growing or starts facing serious constraints. Worth understanding, worth watching. That's the analysis for today. Sources for this segment include reporting from AVWeb, the International Air Transport Association, the FAA's CAF Grand Challenge documentation, ASTM International Standards publications, and industry data from the International Civil Aviation Organization, known as ICAO. Radio Hangar is an AI-generated broadcast built by people who love aviation and want to talk about it all day long. You can find more episodes and show notes at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector. Go learn something about your airplane today. Radio Hangar, clear skies and tailwinds.